We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Oh, hello. This is Kay Ballard, and our guest today is Joy Sharp Franklin. Isn't that the most fabulous name? And that's one of the things that we'll actually be talking with her about. But here are some others. She calls herself an opinionated woman. I think we need to discuss that and figure out just exactly what that means. Also, she's kind of on the soapbox, and this is about childhood consumerism. The woman has actually declared war on Legos. And we're going to be talking about our eighth grade selves. Do you remember how you were when you were in the eighth grade? Perhaps you don't want to go back there, but we're going to drag you along. And then we're going to talk about what she's been experiencing this last year, something that you may have some opinions about yourself. She has been in the transition from being a working woman that is gainfully employed outside the home and has transitioned into being a stay-at-home mom. And we're also going to talk about her very exciting journey this year as she's put together her own personal photo documentary of the state of Oklahoma. Why on earth would anyone bother? So, wouldn't you know it, since this show is all about innovation and creativity and desperation, I have a brand new segment for Women Are Not Funny Radio, a new feature, if you will. And it came to me yesterday sort of out of the blue that this would be a really good idea. I would create a segment and call it Stuff I've Been Thinking About. Well, I love the idea because it really kind of suggests that I do think about stuff. And then I saw immediately that there was a danger built in. I mean, what if listeners love this segment and every week they just had enormous anticipation and curiosity? What has Kay been thinking about this week? So they tune in excitedly to hear and discover that I've spent the entire week without a single thought. It could be embarrassing for me. It could be disappointing to you. So there is a bit of concern. However, I'm going to forge forward because I have been thinking about something. At least I was last night. And this may sound like complaining. It's not. But I just want to tell you that despite the fact that I have a happy life, a little sadness falls in among the happiness from time to time. And that's what happened last night for me. One of the Twitter accounts that I follow is Forbes Woman. And you should know, you may do the same thing as yourself. You know, Forbes has all of these lists, tons of lists, very prestigious lists. And one of the most prestigious lists, surely, has to be the Forbes 400, their list of the 400 wealthiest Americans.
We all know that women are not funny.
Oh, my.
And no one proves it better.
You're listening to Women Are Not Funny.
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 Funny, 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 funny.
With your host, Kay Ballard.
And see, that's another feature of the show, two introductions, two musical intros. I think it's outstanding and totally accidental, so it totally fits into the theme of our show. Anyway, to take you back to my intriguing story, the Forbes 400, the list of the 400 wealthiest Americans, every year I hope to be on it. Every single year. And many times I'm the first person at the newsstand when it comes out because I want to find out, did I make the list this year? And every year, every single year, I'm disappointed because I don't make the list. And I think, oh, I'd love to be on a Forbes list. I would absolutely love to be on a Forbes list. There's the 100 top celebrities. Oh, man, why am I not on that list, I wonder? Well, anyway, last night I was online and I went to the Forbes Woman Twitter page. And I looked over to the right and discovered, of course, that there are Twitter lists, Forbes Twitter lists for Forbes Woman. I said, oh, wow. So I went there. I'm just sad to report. All it means, this Twitter list feature, is now there are half a dozen additional Forbes lists that I don't have a prayer to be on. If that sounds like complaining, I just can't help it. I mean, it's a totally new level of failure, and apparently I have made it. So, here's something else, though. Speaking of major magazines, and I will because you know I'm very egotistical and love to brag. Just prior to the show starting, I spent about an hour and a half on the telephone with a reporter for a major women's magazine. And our conversation was centering around my comedy CD, KK's Divorce, about my divorce. And, of course, I was being interviewed, but it's not a certainty that they're going to feature it. And I was doing my best to sound like they should. And the reporter had about a million questions for me about my divorce, and they were very intrusive questions because that's the nature, of course, of magazine reporting, and I was more than happy to spill my guts. But the fact of the matter is I no longer have a brain cell left, you know, and I just feel like the very nature of the intrusiveness is something that I can turn around and inflict on today's guest, you know, kind of like for revenge. Another thing that I want you to know that's really kind of crazy is that I chose today to use a new system of keeping my notes for the conversation with my guest. It's a cool new system, and it involves a lot of different post-it notes. Well, my early experience with it is it doesn't work. I mean, things are totally in shambles. That's probably why I played two different intros accidentally. I just, you know, I'm just completely at my wit's end because I have all of these little post-its, all with different shabby little notes about what it is that I want Joy to tell us, and they're all over the place. It is just going to be very interesting. If I sound more random than ordinary, that'll be the reason. At least I have an excuse. But I'm looking forward to revenge on our guest. I'm going to be completely intrusive. I spilled my guts. She has to spill hers. It only seems fair. The other thing, though, that may have come about, you know, when this reporter was speaking with me, he wanted to know all these things about me, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm so incredibly interesting. So maybe my very intrusive interview of Joy will have exactly the same effect. Maybe she will come off of it thinking, oh, Kay thinks I'm fascinating, and it really will be the truth. So I can't wait to talk with her. And I just told a lie. I will wait to talk with her until she answered those two very important questions that I must always ask guests before I bring them on. Joy, is it possible that you are merely using your appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to something better?
I'm always willing to use anything as a stepping stone to something else, something better. Since people working at Walmart are making more money than me today.
Well, at least I know. At least I know the motives behind your time spent with us today. So, one other thing, though. Since you are staying at home now and apparently having some trepidation about that whole thing, are you here actually to audition to take over my show?
Oh, I'm definitely not out to take over your show because I really hate listening to my voice on the radio or on playback in any form. So I'm not here to take over. Sorry.
You know, that's good news for me. I can go ahead with, you know, a little less risk, but try not to be, you know, too engaging because I feel like my job as host of this show is always on the line, and that's the case even though I am actually the executive producer. So, Joy, you call yourself an opinionated woman. What really does that mean? What constitutes an opinionated woman? Can I have your opinion on that?
Well, I think because I have pretty strong political views and just my worldview is fairly opinionated. I'm not too afraid to say it. Sometimes I kind of back down on what I want to say, but I have pretty strong opinions on politics, education.
Well, would you agree that some people think that the phrase opinionated woman is a bit redundant, that all women are opinionated?
I haven't thought of it that way. I guess most women are opinionated. I think some people are more opinionated than others.
So you kind of wear it as a badge, right? You're proud of it.
Well, I didn't initially step out to say that I'm so opinionated, but it seems that I am. It's just that I'm not afraid to state my opinion.
So were you born opinionated?
Was I born opinionated?
When did this happen? When did you become, obviously, you weren't, you know, you were born a female, you weren't born a woman, but were you opinionated at a very early age?
I've always had opinions, seen, especially politically, ever since I was a pretty small child, but, you know, they've changed over the years, so, I've went from being the opinionated, fairly liberal in my beliefs to an opinionated libertarian. So I've changed as I get older, which is a good thing because no one wants to be a teenager.
Yeah. Well, did you, what do you think the attitude, just generally, of men is towards opinionated women? What has been your experience with that? Is it a plus or a minus when it comes to dealing with men?
You know, I think if they're your bosses, sometimes it's a minus because, you know we're in the South, so, they expect women to have their place, and it can cause you problems sometimes. But I've always been fairly well-behaved at work, so when I was working. So now.
Well, there you go, Joy. I mean, I can tell you this. Yes, I, at the moment, am in Texas, and you, at the moment, are in Oklahoma. But there are men all across the United States, North America, the entire world, who object to opinionated women. Does that surprise you?
Huh? I lost you for a second. Hello?
I said yes. Do you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you.
Okay, what I told you was I just broke the harsh news to you that you don't have to be in the South to run into men who do not prefer opinionated women.
Oh, no, they're all over, especially
certain regions. They certainly are. Well, I will proudly say that I am opinionated, but one of the things that I learned, and I'm told, Joy, you should know this, I am completely against self-betterment. You know, I'm almost certain that I'm just about as good as I need to be. But one of the things that I learned from someone who seems to be devoted to the betterment of others, one of the many, is the TV pastor Joel Osteen, you know. And I am not inclined towards a religious state of being. But there were times when I was watching TV that the TV was on and I listened to Joel Osteen. And I found him very engaging. And one thing I remember him saying that when I heard it, I said, oh, really? And then I thought about it and it was kind of a life changer for me. What he said, Joy, was you do not have to have an opinion about everything. Now, that may be obvious to some people, but for me, that was really a revelation. I thought about it and said, ah, he's right. You don't. And it was incredibly freeing. So how do you feel about that? Do you think a person has to have an opinion about everything?
Oh, no, I don't think people have to have an opinion about everything. I think there's so many different people in the world of so many different levels and different talents that, you know, surely they can't spend all their time thinking about everything, or they wouldn't be experts in what they are experts in.
Yeah, well, but surely you have noticed in your life experience that there are people who have that orientation that he was speaking against, and I confess, I was one of them. I used to have an opinion about everything. You know, I thought that was my job, but I no longer do. So you've had this transition this year. I ran into, and this was just recently, a statement uttered on a conference call by the person leading it. This person was talking about something that they were advocating, and they said, your life will never be the same. And I just thought about that statement. I thought, big deal. Our lives are never the same. We're constantly in transition, are we not? I mean, one of Women Are Not Funny Radio's regular featured guests is Melissa Pierce. And she is in the process of finally rolling out the documentary film that she's spent the last 2 years making called Life in Perpetual Beta. You know, don't we lead lives? Just the nature of our lives these days in a changing world, that our lives are always in transition?
I think we are, and I know transitioning out of a fairly secure job, I mean, because I was in special education, transitioning away from that and leaving that security, which, you know, and, you know, most Americans can't say that they were in a secure job, and leaving a secure job to trusting someone else to take care of everything and make sure everything's running right while trying to do what's best for your family is life is a transition. And I felt by being secure, I felt more insecure. Having a secure job made me insecure because I felt like I was never going to achieve the goals that I wanted in life. Does that make sense? It probably doesn't. I'm kind of ADHD, so.
Well, no, let me see if I understand what you're saying. The very nature of your situation where you had a good bit of your time devoted to the job made you feel less secure about your life because you weren't spending your time in the ways that you would have preferred?
Well, yeah, and I wasn't happy, and, you know, when you're not happy, it doesn't reflect well on your family, and just because you're secure in a position or in an employment doesn't mean it's the right thing for you. And
well, here's a question I have for you, and this just comes to mind. I'm just intrigued. How did you decide in the first place that you would seek a career as a teacher?
Well, I graduated college in 1999 with a bachelor's degree in history. I went to find employment. I thought, well, good, I have a college degree. You know, I'm a woman. I have a college degree. Surely I'll be able to find a job right away. And I went out job searching at the same time my husband did, who didn't have a college degree. He got all the job offers, and I didn't get, I think I had one job offer off of that. And I decided, well, I love history. I really love history, and I do love teaching. I decided that I would go back to school and get my education certification. And I realized that there truly is, to some degree, a glass ceiling for women. And it was depressing. But,
yeah, isn't it funny that a lot of women think it's just a rumor? You know, they look up, they can't see the glass, and they think it's not there until they're up against it. Just this very, you know, it's fascinating. I'm probably 20 minutes or so older than you are. And women in my generation, which is the generation of women who are 20 minutes older than your generation, we've known that there was a glass ceiling. But some women who, like you, are 20 minutes or so younger than we are, have not believed in it until you have encountered it. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I think so. I think we're raised to be so idealistic that we will always, you can do, well, it's the American dream. You can do whatever you want. You know, we can succeed and make opportunities for ourselves, which is true. But, you know, in doing that, you still have to deal with other people a lot of times. So you can create your own opportunities, but you can also run into the glass.
Yeah, well, let's don't do that. You know, I'm going to take a sharp right, because one of the things that I want to talk with you about, and it's a must as far as I'm concerned, has anyone other than me, and surely they have, told you that you just have the world's coolest thing, name, rather? Would you agree with that? You just Joy Sharp Franklin. I think that has to be the world's coolest name.
Well, I would probably disagree with that, because I've always hated my name. But there's a story behind my name, and I just go by, you know, I just go by my married name, and sometimes I've thrown my maiden name on there just for fun. But I'm named Joy because my mother wanted to name me Sunny Day. That was her first choice of names, and my sister had a baby book, and she talked her out of it, thank God. So, I mean, I think there's worse alternatives, because my mom wanted to name me Sunny Day, and I always think, well, Joy's not so bad, because I'm not Sunny Day.
Oh, my. I mean, your mother must just be the most original woman. And so she was thwarted from naming you Sunny Day. Interesting. Very, very good work on your sister's behalf. But what is it like growing up with the name Joy? Is there an extra sort of burden on you where you're being told that you have to live up to it?
I always thought it was kind of cruel. Always hated the holiday season when I was a kid. Joy to the world. People would sing it, you know, we had Ren and Stimpy, happy, happy, joy, joy. You know, I was fairly careful with my own children that they didn't have any names like that.
They didn't bear the burden. Well, then your last name when you were growing up was Sharp. You know, and that's a great name. I mean, you can wear it as a label. You can claim it, right? Joy Sharp.
Well, it's always good having the last name of Sharp, is that when you're one of the smart kids, that it's another thing that the teachers could get you with. Oh, she's a sharp kid. And I haven't thought about this in ages. Yeah, I definitely. I feel sorry for all of the children whose last name is Sharp that aren't so sharp.
Yeah, well, that would be a problem. Or what about the little girls named Joy who just really aren't, who are always crying, you know?
Well, that was probably me when I was a kid, so I always thought, well, you know, it wasn't very nice.
Well, I mean, I just think it would be fabulous to be named Sharp, you know, have your last name Sharp. It certainly would be much better, you know, I know someone whose last name is Sweat. that would, you know, that being named Sharp would be obviously much better. And it just makes me think of a time when I was in law school, one of my professors, and he is either dearly departed or departed. We just really won't say which, but there was definitely a glass ceiling in his classroom. So big lecture, and you typically do not want to be called on in a law school class because you are expected to be very well prepared, and it's not a case where you raise your hand and you're chosen. It's a case where you're selected completely to your surprise so that you always have to be ready. But what this particular professor was inclined to do is only call on the men in our class. And then after they would recite their opinion about whatever case we had been assigned to read for the day, if he liked what they said, he would come back with, "Oh, you're a real Sharpie." And so it kind of got on my nerves at some point because I realized I was sitting there in the classroom. I perhaps was a Sharpie or I wasn't a Sharpie, but either way, if I were a Sharpie, no one would ever know because this professor, who shall go nameless, and actually his daughter is a major reporter and anchor on ABC News, he never called me a Sharpie, Joy Sharp, but you were called Sharp constantly. Just every day. You can't really relate to my sad life experience.
Yeah. Every day. For 18 years, I've been married for 15, so I've been Franklin for a long time. So.
I know, but that's the other point about my name, darling, is that you, once again, you scored. I mean, isn't Franklin one of the most esteemed Americans ever?
You're totally
associated with old Ben now. And, you know, he started libraries, Joy Sharp Franklin. He had 17 children or something like that, Joy Sharp Franklin. He is the one who told us that a penny saved is a penny earned. And since his autobiography is still a well-read volume, I, being among those who've read it, I can picture Franklin walking down the street eating a loaf of bread out of his hand that he had just purchased in a bakery. So what do you think about that? See, didn't you score on a name that would, your married name, a name that would evoke so much colorful imagery?
I guess I'm lucky. I've never even thought about it. Actually, I haven't read Ben Franklin's autobiography, so.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that is your assignment, and you didn't even know that occasionally our guests get homework assignments. So that is your assignment. But now you agree. You see what I mean, don't you, that you really actually do have one of the best names ever?
Well, I'll have to start telling people that, so.
That's right. It could be your sobriquet. Joy Sharp Franklin, best name ever. Yeah, perfect. So you have declared war on Legos.
Well, I kind of declared war on my whole house. I always felt working that I just never had time to do everything, and I always felt like because my husband really does work so hard that I – when he's out working 14 hours a day and I'm working school days, you know, the one thing that got neglected. Oh, and you know, doing photography trips on the side all the time. My poor house has borne the brunt of my life, well, and my children, which is worse. But a couple weeks ago I was cleaning out my boys' room and all I did was pick Legos out of the carpet for like an hour, hours. So I've declared war on Legos, but they still pretty much rule the house because my youngest makes amazing little Lego creations, so he gets to keep his Legos.
Well, I think that's very cool, and it's something that I want to talk with you more about, because I've actually come up with a plan that might make Legos, given your feeling about childhood consumerism, it might make them make a little more sense to you. So I'll be telling you that, but first, something really fun. You have been responsible for bringing today's musical guest. Our selection goes up a little notch because we're going to be playing the newest single from one of your favorite groups, Fiction Plane. And apparently they go by both. But here's what I want to know. One of the singers in this group, and they're a little dark, they're a little edgy, but they have a sound reminiscent of a singer that we're all very familiar with. Is it okay? Do they flout it, or is it kind of behind the curtain that one of their members, three members in this band, has a famous daddy?
I didn't even know. They actually opened for the Police the first time I got to see them in concert in Dallas. And I had no idea who he was. I had no idea who they were. I mean, I really liked them when I heard them without knowing who they were. And they always did autograph signings, which I think is really cool. You know, you're playing the American Airlines Center in Dallas, and that you would do the opening act and go sign. And I didn't know who he belonged to until I was in line to get my CD signed. And I was like, wow, that's why I liked his voice.
They really do have kind of that sound, not totally, obviously, but you can hear it, you know, some of the time. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, I think three-man band, definitely. But I also felt like the singer basically reminded me a lot of you two the first time I heard them, too. So I can't say they always do, but sometimes he hits a note, and I'm like, hey, that sounds a lot like his father.
Yes. So we're talking about Sting, but let's hear this latest single called Out of My Face. And even the title, I think that is very typical of their songs. They are definitely opinionated. So here goes.
I'm
I love that. And listeners, that is so new, out of my face. It is not available. I haven't checked iTunes. It's not available yet on Amazon M3. But what?
They don't have a label in the United States right now, so they're looking, I guess. So
I see. They're on this huge European tour, and they're in the Netherlands right now. But anyway, thank you for putting me onto them, and they are terrific. Now, you can buy, they have a couple of albums that are certainly available on Amazon MP3, but this particular song isn't. And so I feel like we're very special, Joy Sharp Franklin, that we had the opportunity to bring that into our conversation. So here's what I've come up with on the Legos. You're against childhood consumerism, but did you ever consider that if you build the collection of Legos up to the point where this is possible, a child could take their childhood Lego collection and build their own adult home? I've seen such things.
Oh, I just don't like stepping on them.
Well, okay, that's fine. You know, I mean, people have their preferences. I'll give you yours. So here is another question for you. I want to know all about this fabulous photographic expedition of Oklahoma. You said Oklahoma is here, and I am here, so I might as well start here. Do I have that right?
Well, I got into photography really probably about a year ago. I went to an arts institute for teachers in Oklahoma, which is wonderful, and got to work with a couple of amazing photographers. And so I thought, well, what can I do? And two or three years ago, we stumbled upon this amazing fort in Oklahoma, and I came back home to pull up images from my classes, and I realized, because I taught Oklahoma history, and I realized I just didn't have the resources I needed to teach kids about Oklahoma. And so I started this as a teacher, and now it's totally selfish now. It's great fun, and I just felt like I didn't have the quality of images to pull up, you know, PowerPoints and to create things from my classroom. And it's still one of my goals is to work for TeacherTube and put up PowerPoints and for other teachers to use. I just felt like I couldn't find the images that I needed, because when you teach special education or children with reading problems, having really good lecture and discussion is great, but presenting really good visuals is really the key with especially teaching about Oklahoma, because it's here and it's so easy. We can't always go on a field trip, but I could pull up really good images, and then the kids could get an essence of the place that I wanted them to learn about. But now it's kind of a blog. It's fun. It's a hobby.
Well, and your photos are terrific and very fun to look at. You obviously display a lot of talent as a photographer. I was particularly fascinated, though. As I told you, I have a bit of history with Oklahoma, and, you know, I spent some very interesting times during my childhood there because my grandmother actually lived in Oklahoma. But Oklahoma does not have a reputation for being great, you know, for having great beauty. Would you agree with that?
I don't think we're looked at, because I think, you know, and that kind of goes back to consumerism. I think we're such a society that's so focused on let's go to Disneyland or Disney World or Vegas or, you know, the big cities, that we don't always focus, or the Grand Canyon. We have these particular places that are apparently on everyone's list to visit, but we don't always focus on what we have around us or going to change. You know, to be able to go 30 miles away and see something amazing, or an hour away, and to discover these places that you've never been to that are at your back door, I think everybody should look at their state parks and their touristy places around their own state, which is a lot cheaper.
Well, I agree with you, and I also believe that Oklahoma is particularly easy to make fun of. And I can recall, even though I had some very fun experiences there, and most of them weren't related to the beauty of the landscape, but I had some fun times there. But when I was teaching aerobics many years ago before law school, one of the songs that I used on occasion for a cool down, and this is because I had a certification from an aerobics company, if you will, rhythmic aerobics, which originated in Oklahoma, and one of the songs for cool down was "You're the Reason God Made Oklahoma." And every time I played that, kind of a great song, but every time I played it, I thought, is that really a compliment? And so how do you feel about that? Is that kind of mean?
I have always liked Oklahoma. When I was a kid, I was raised in northern Nebraska. And coming from Nebraska, Oklahoma was very different. You know, the trees and, you know, it was very urban. And, I mean, compared to where I was raised in a town of, you know, 550, Oklahoma was a very different place. It was almost the landscape, especially where I live now, was almost just, it was almost tropical in comparison to where I came from and where I was raised. So, and I always liked coming to Oklahoma. Now, I didn't get into country music until I was older. So, but to me, and having taught school in Kansas, a lot of the kids that I taught out on the Great Plains always talked about going to Oklahoma on vacation. So maybe for Kansas and Nebraska, Oklahoma is not such a bad place. But
yeah,
I imagine
maybe
Texas has a superiority complex anyway. So
yeah, well, absolutely. But I think some of it is related to that. Yeah, having grown up in Dallas, thinking Oklahoma was a bit backwards. But the funny thing is, my experiences in Oklahoma, since my grandmother lived on a farm, were all rural. And it was the most wonderful thing for me because I was permitted, and my brothers and I were permitted, to just roam free. You know, there were no dangers, although let me tell you what some of my experiences were. In Oklahoma is where I saw a snake eat another snake. And Oklahoma is where I walked barefoot on bull nettles because I had buried my new shoes in the creek and couldn't find them. So I had to walk to the house get stickers on bare feet, and then also get the total disapproval of my mother who had just bought me the new shoes. Oklahoma is where I sat up in a tree, and my brothers sat up in a tree. We climbed the trees, and then my grandmother had cattle. So the cattle came over to where we were, and we couldn't climb down. We were too scared because the bull was there. I don't know, you know, I doubt that we would have been gored, but we didn't know that. So we just sat in the tree and cried. And then I had the kind of, I don't know how to describe it, rather, surrealistic experience, because on this farm, from time to time, you would just run into oil derricks. And so you'd just be out of the blue. You'd be walking along and, there's a derrick. Not that they were heavily producing oil wells, but they were there. So, are these the things that I named my Oklahoma experiences, anything you've ever photographed?
Oh, well, I live on 120 acres, so, definitely, but I don't allow my kids to go roaming around because I've seen mountain lions and we know that there's mountain lions on the property and the rattlesnake thing, so, so really, whenever we moved to Oklahoma when I was a kid, we weren't allowed free reign over the property because of bigger, scarier things than what we ever found in Nebraska. When I was a kid, though, I ran around all over where we lived up there. But
didn't you love that? Wasn't that the most wonderful thing? And there's a lot of talk for good reason about how now children are, you know, tied to their devices and they never go outdoors and there's childhood obesity. You certainly can't be obese when you're running all over the countryside climbing trees and avoiding bulls, right?
Oh, yeah, and I guess kids don't get enough outside. I drag them to state parks and places like that, and, you know, we've discovered that we absolutely love, like, the Little Niagara over by Sulphur, which is about an hour away, and they've enjoyed it, too, but they're still pretty attached to their video games.
Well, yeah. Well, if they're modern children, they have to be, so have you ever, speaking of falls, where my parents spent their honeymoon was in Oklahoma at Turner Falls. Are you familiar with that? Have you ever photographed that?
Oh, I haven't photographed it yet. We've been there, we go there once every couple of years. I have an entrance fee there. I think it's run by the city. So, you know, it's not as cheap as the Little Niagara, so we don't go there as often, but I need to go back to Turner Falls. And that's beautiful. Oklahoma has beautiful places. I mean, if you go from the Panhandle to Idabel, you run into all kinds of different diversity as far as geology and geography. It's really a fascinating state. And to go to the north, you run into Ponca City and the oil barons and just mega mansions that you can go visit. And, you know, they brought a lot to the state, and sometimes I don't think people realize what there is out there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, and I'm sure their tourism is going to just boom after our millions of listeners hear this conversation and are motivated to go there. You know, the worm has turned. Orlando is no longer the major destination. After this edition of Women Are Not Funny, we are going to be personally responsible for a huge upturn in tourism there. How do you feel about that? It's pretty great, isn't it?
I don't think America can really afford Disney World anymore. So I think maybe they should come to Oklahoma and check us out, see what we have to offer.
Well,
absolutely. After I finish Oklahoma, I'll have to go to Texas and start there. So I told my husband, I said, it's going to be a lot of fun because, you know, I really like the Gulf Coast down by Houston. I said, it'll be a lot of fun doing Expedition Texas because, you know, I just have a bigger list of places to go.
Well, that's true. Quite big. So let's talk for a moment, because we promised listeners we would, about our eighth grade self. So what were you like in the eighth grade? Do you recall?
Well, eighth grade, you know, they talk a lot about being bullied in schools and being picked on in eighth grade. And I think junior high overall for most children, including myself, is probably the most miserable experience, except for maybe my daughter, who is like little social butterfly. I think she's enjoying junior high. But I know that I think my theory is that people mess each other up mentally in high school and junior high forever, and we spend the rest of our lives trying to recover from it. So I can't say I like junior high.
Well, I agree with your theory, and I think it's a very interesting time in a person's life. And, of course, one of the reasons I was motivated for us to talk about it today is that I am aware that you have a daughter in middle school. And also because it gives me the opportunity to talk about myself. You know, when I was a foundation executive, the particular foundation that I worked for was a large national women's educational foundation that also did research into gender differences in education, that sort of thing. And when I first started working there, this research project was already in process, and they published their findings, and they called it Girls in the Middle, referring to middle school. And one of the things that they discovered through their research is that there were different styles of behaving, and that it's kind of a pivotal time in a girl's lifetime for a variety of reasons, because she's coming up against maybe some rebellion, feelings of rebelling against her parents. And also in school, she's experiencing a lot of different styles, and that some of the girls who are maybe a little more vocal, maybe a little more displeasing, let's say, of the teachers, or to the teachers, they're really kind of working on what could be a leadership style, and that if you go too far in telling them to behave nicely, that you're quelling that a bit. What do you think about that theory?
I hadn't heard that theory. I think it's good that when I run into a girl who's somewhat outspoken at that age group, because it shows that they have confidence, and, you know, if they're willing to speak out against that they disagree with their teacher, because, you know, a lot of times girls they're so drawn into the little social cliques that they just they don't engage the same way if you're in a classroom of girls, you know, girl-boy mix, as the boys do. I also know that sometimes the girls at the top of the class, you know, that, you know, kids pick on each other for being smart. So it's always interesting to see how they act, and it's always good to have confident girls come in, because I know a lot of them batter each other with their self-esteem during this age group. So
yeah, well, for me it was kind of an interesting time, because I was experimenting with the whole idea that it was okay to behave in a way that would not permit me to be the teacher's pet. Because I had spent my elementary school years being the teacher's pet, right? And that got plenty old. So I was ready to, you know, my teachers were a little bit afraid of me. I experienced a lot of experimentation, I guess is the best way to describe it, with some different styles. And I led protest movements, Joy. I mean, that's what I was bad. But how were you? Is that a time in your life do you recall? Did you start in terms of your relationship with your own mother? Were you close to her at that time, or did you start pulling away, as so many girls do at exactly that age?
I was always really close to my mom, even all through high school. It was probably when I was 18, that's when I rebelled and I got married. But I was always very shy. And I was always very, very shy when I was in school, probably all the way kindergarten through high school. College is really when I was comfortable. I was really comfortable with the crowd and the professors. And, you know, it was a much better experience to be in college. But social phobia, maybe speaking, being around small groups, parties, or things like that. I'm not exactly comfortable with that to this day. But I was the shy one, so I was the quiet one. So, but I did public speaking, drama, and FFA speaking, and things of that nature. But I always had trouble with the cliquish kind of groups of people and girls. So, as I said, I got picked on in junior high, but, you know, I was because you're quiet. And I've noticed teaching that a lot of times the shy kids end up getting picked on because they're shy. And I always thought that's really strange. They just want to be left alone.
Well, kind of easy targets, I suppose, is the way, you know, they identify themselves as easy targets by exhibiting shy behavior. But I think it's fascinating that you can describe yourself as shy, but you also do enjoy public speaking. I think it's very cool.
I was able to get up on stage, but, you know, sometimes the social things are just awkward and uncomfortable. So,
Yeah, well, you mean you can turn that into a performance of its own, I suppose. I'm also fascinated with the thing you expressed about you were very close and sweet to your mother when you were in the eighth grade. I can tell you my experience as a daughter is that's when I started talking about mean girls. I was very mean to my mother all the time. I was just a little hellion. And so I assumed when I became the mother of a daughter that once she hit 14, I had it coming to me, you know, that she was going to treat me the way I treated my mother and it would be very, very deserved. She didn't. She absolutely didn't. She was an angel. But at some point that changed. And so my own belief is that all of that's very developmental. You know, it has to happen one time, sooner or later. And anyone out there who was always sweet can protest my theory. I'd love to hear from you. So,
I just think girls are just sneaky and manipulative, and I think women are the same way. So, I think just the way you handle it's a little different.
Well, that is true, and even though I realize, having grown up in Dallas, that that's not the true South, my joke has always been when anyone accuses a Southern woman of being manipulative, we say, "Why, thank you, hon," and that it's a skill you learn at your mother's knee. So, what's next for you? I've heard rumors about grad school.
Yeah, I would like to go back to school. I haven't. I've been kind of lazy. I've actually been enjoying my quiet days at home. So I really got to start looking into that. I would like to get my master's in history and continue working on that so I can, maybe be an unemployed PhD at one time.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating, though, this interest in photography. And, you know, quite frankly, and you didn't ask me, so that makes it much more attractive for me to tell you what I think, since you've not even asked me what that is. I suppose this is one area where I do have an opinion. But I think there's a lot of potential for your Expedition Oklahoma documentary to obtain some sort of sponsorship. To me, there ought to be any number of entities in Oklahoma, maybe outside of Oklahoma, that would be interested in helping you advance that, because it is, no kidding, Joy, it is very cool.
I would love for them, and pass my phone number along and say, yes, send me money and I'll travel wherever you want. That's what I told my husband. I said, I really think the travel channel should come in and sponsor me and send me to, like, other places, because that would just be more fun than Oklahoma. But
yeah, but at the same time, the fact that it's Expedition Oklahoma is kind of what makes it really cool and unique, because you've taken your eye, your photographer's eye, your sense of the location and what it means, and so you are out there photographing something that's really very real, like antique tractor shows. I've always had the theory that those exist so that men can vex their wives, you know,
so that men can
vex their wives with their predilection for collecting antique tractors. I know that's what my father's been able to do.
I'll have to photograph our backyard. My dad's probably sold parts for everybody in the country because he tears them apart and sells them on eBay. But I spent my childhood going to tractor shows and flea markets and things like that. So I actually really enjoy going to tractor shows. So I decided that I was going to definitely try to photograph as many of those as I could.
Well, once again, that is very cool. And what makes your project so special is your subject matter. And speaking of special, you've just been a lovely guest. And I want to thank you so much. I've surely enjoyed having this conversation with you.
Well, thank you for having me. I've been nervous. I'm like telling everyone here's the link. Please don't listen to it because, you know, I'm awkward and hearing, you know, I have to hear my voice back. So
yeah, well, it's kind of like the whole premise of the show. Please listen because women are not funny. So, listeners, you're not off the hook. I want to see you here next week.
You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. You can listen to our replays anytime you please, but it's so much more fun when you're here. So join us again live next Friday afternoon for Women Are Not Funny Radio.